Hello, it's Robert Bathurst here. I was one of the first guests on My Time Capsule, and Mike has asked me to tell you that you can now listen to the podcast ad-free by subscribing to Acast Plus. Details of how to join are in the description of each episode. Mike says it's very reasonably priced. In fact, Mike says it's a bargain. And who am I to disagree, locked here in his cellar? Anyway, for a small subscription, Acast Plus, My Time Capsule, ad-free. Free. Unlike me.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of My Time Capsule. I'm Mike Fenton-Stevens, and this is the podcast where I ask my guest to tell me the five things from their life that they would like to preserve in a time capsule. They can choose four things that they cherish and would really like to preserve, but they must also choose one thing that they'd like to get rid of from their life, something they'd like to bury in the ground and never have to think about again. My guest in this episode is the actor and comedian Ed Byrne. Ed's stand-up career began during his college years at Strathclyde University in Glasgow, which led him to quit his studies and start his own comedy club. After moving to London, he quickly established himself as one of the most successful performers on the comedy circuit, with sell-out shows at the Edinburgh Fringe, in the West End of London, and major venues all over the world. He has become a permanent fixture on television and radio in the UK and Ireland, in such shows as Mock the Week and Have I Got News for You, and regular appearances on The Graham Norton Show, where he famously had a pie thrust in his face by Robert Downey Jr. Yeah, it could happen to any of us. Ed made the TV show Dara and Ed's Big Adventure with his friend and best man, Dara O'Brien, having a number of extraordinary adventures, including sledding down the side of a volcano. Again, it could happen to any of us. He was the host of Ed Byrne's Just for Laughs on RTE for four seasons and the voice of the Carphone Warehouse ads for 8 years. Again, it could happen to anyone. Why didn't it happen to me? Oh well, let's find out what Ed Byrne would like to put in his time capsule. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. You're a great walker, aren't you?
I do, I love a walk.
A hill walker, yeah. And all that sort of thing.
But there's no hills where I live.
No.
And I find a walk on the flat very boring, so I do try and run. And I used to run a lot more and work out and things. And now since the summer, I just stopped.
Yep.
And now I've literally just started again this month.
I got to the summer and thought, what's the point? Who's ever going to see me again? Oh, well, Ed, so we're going to talk about five things you'd like to put into a time capsule. That's the idea of this programme. Mm-hmm. So do you want to have a go?
Yeah. I mean, it's very hard to think of a list like this and not just come off incredibly self-involved. But then I suppose I remember once I was talking to a guy and he had been talking to a woman who had interviewed me for an Australian newspaper. And she had said, he does go on about himself. She was interviewing me. I was the subject of that conversation. Surely that's a useful thing for a person to do when you're interviewing them. So ever since then, I've been very self-conscious in interviews not to talk about myself too much.
She's ruined you. She's ruined you for everyone else.
But the first thing is an album, an LP, kids, grabbing the younger demographic straight away. with an album called The Pick of Billy Connolly, which was back in the day when comedy was, which it still is to a certain extent in America, more so than here, where you consume comedy in audio form. And Billy Connolly used to release albums, and there was a compilation album called The Pick of Billy Connolly, and the cover of it was him picking his nose. And it was bits of routines from a number of different albums previous to that. But that album was key to putting me on a path to becoming a comedian myself. But also it was just something I remember from childhood. All of us sitting around listening to it, the whole family. And I can still see right now, I can see my dad wearing a brown woolen jumper, drinking a cup of tea and eating a biscuit and laughing at the routines.
Oh, fantastic.
And I just remember it was perfect. It was because what it was, most of them, there were songs, comedy songs, but there was also the thing that he was really famous for, particularly in the old days, was he used to basically tell old jokes.
Yeah.
He would tell an old joke, and then throughout the course of the joke would jump off into these observational side alleys.
Yeah.
Tangents. And that was the original stuff. That was the stuff that Billy Connolly wrote. But he would use an old joke with a setup and a rule of three and a punchline as the sort of framework to hang his observations on. And I didn't realize at the time that that's what he was doing, but it was a brilliant comedy delivery system.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was perfect.
It's a bit like Dave Allen in a way. Dave Allen would do that same thing of have a joke, but in the midst of it, lots of little side jokes.
Yeah, but Dave Allen, I always seem to remember, even the jokes themselves were original jokes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were still his.
Yeah.
Whereas Billy Connolly, the fact that Billy Connolly came from the folk circuit, like Mike Harding and Jasper Carrot, where the original star of the show was the music, and then they could do a bit of chatting in between.
Mm-hmm.
So they had the safety net of the singing, and then it just, the chatting just grew and grew and took over.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, in comedy, it's great when a joke grows organically like that with the retelling. You find another line in it. Every time you do the joke, you find another little bit you can put on it. And that stuff tends to be the funniest stuff, as opposed to stuff you sit, try and write and go, what's funny? So their entire thing was always this thing of an old joke, and so you're safe. So if the audience aren't really digging it, you just tell that joke and then you tell the next joke. Mm-hmm. But if it's working and they're enjoying you, you put more and more of yourself into it.
Yeah.
Like Mike Harding did a thing, and I got to meet him at the BBC Folk Awards a few years ago, because I remember that he did a joke on TV and he held the record for the longest joke told on TV. It was part of his BBC series. And he basically told a joke that went on for half an hour. And again, as I say, it was an old joke, but throughout the course of the joke, he would digress with observations, and it made the joke half an hour long.
Brilliant. I like Mike Harding a lot.
Yeah, people forget he's a comedian.
Oh, he was really great. Really funny comedian.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't do stand-up at all. He doesn't do comedy at all anymore. I don't know if he even plays that much music. He used to write for Great Outdoors magazine, and now I think it's fishing. Fishing is what he does now. That's the big thing.
Do you remember any of the routines?
Yeah, there was the one about the two blokes who go to Rome.
The Pope joke.
Exactly. Uh-huh. And they go, what does the Pope drink? He likes creme de menthe. And so, well, it's £2 of that then.
Yeah.
And it was the jokes, and then they wake up the next morning. And, cause here's the thing. I remember a priest telling this joke on the altar.
Wow.
As part of a sermon. So that's how known the joke was, that even a priest, because the joke was waking up feeling absolutely awful and then going, so that's what the Pope drinks. No wonder they carry him around in a chair.
That's it.
Yeah, And that was Joe. But as I say, Billy Connolly stretched that out for like 10 minutes, because he did a whole thing about the fact that they woken up and they're covered in puke.
Yeah.
And then it was a thing of, here's a thing. You notice when you're sick, there's always diced carrots in it. I have never eaten diced carrots in my life. And then there's all the, is there a bloke going around with a pocket full of diced carrots following drunk men?
That's brilliant stuff.
You know. And I remember it all. And then what I used to do is, and I must have been 10 years old, And I used to recite these routines then for friends, half of whom didn't get it. I didn't get half of it.
No.
But I would just, and I would know it off by heart. And I would even do it in this awful Glaswegian accent that I couldn't do. There was that one. There was one about football violence. There was one about a guy who goes to the Rangers-Celtic match. And it, very cleverly, he never says whether he was a Rangers fan or a Celtic fan. It was just like he goes to the wrong end and then his team scores. And the guys send him off to get him a Bovril. Do this thing of like, you go and get me, the other team sports, you go and get, because they're getting pissed off, go and get me a Bovril. So he goes and but you'll run away. So leave one of your shoes. And he comes back and there's a jobby in his shoe. And then he goes home with his shoes full of shit. And on his way home, meets a BBC cameraman doing an interview. We're talking about football violence. You have any views? Yes, I have. Football violence will never end. Not as long as they are shitting in our shoes and we are pissing in their Bovril.
Yep.
But again, it would take ages going on about, you know, the fact, the whole thing about the only time Scottish people drink Bovril is at football matches. And
see, I'm trying to work out if, in fact, he ever stopped that or just became better at disguising it.
He did. He he doesn't do old jokes anymore. He tells stories and he wonders that it's, and it's all the observations now. But as I say, in the, you know, in the earlier days, it was, as I say, he would use an old joke as a framework to hang those observations. Mm. And I think now, I'm not really sure why he made the switch, I guess, because he just, he can.
Yeah. I saw that programme, which was sort of his retirement programme on ITV, where he talked about his career and lots of people talked about him. It was a beautiful programme, really moving. And he was, seemed extraordinarily content on it for a man who was, you know, who's very ill and knows he's not got long to live. He just seemed to be very happy with the life he's led.
I think I'd be. Mm-hmm. If I was him, I reckon if I was looking back at that, I'd be patting myself on the back.
Yeah.
I've never met him. The closest I got to meet, I sat beside his wife, Pamela Stevenson, at the Sony Awards once.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, I'm very familiar with her work also, so I was able to chat, but I did slip in. Big fan of your husband, sort of thing.
Wow, marvellous.
Because we did, we used to listen to his albums, and we used to listen to it was my brother owned them, but we used to listen to Not the 9 O'Clock News albums and Monty Python albums as well.
There you are then, yeah. So the whole, the full gamut, really, that's what was available. Have you didn't go further back to sort of Peter Sellers and things like that?
I never, my brother used to listen to The Goon Show. Maybe I was just a bit too young. I didn't quite get on board with The Goons in the way that I did with Monty Python and Not the 9 O'Clock News and Billy Connolly.
Well, it is possible that it's not as funny as people remember.
That is, far be it for me to start rubbishing a genius like Peter Sellers or Spike Milligan.
No.
I preferred Spike Milligan's war memoirs, funnily enough. You know, Hitler, My Partner's Downfall and stuff like that. That was actually my personal favourite part of Spike Milligan's output, was reading those.
Yes. Of the people in Not the 9 O'Clock News, when they all went off and made their own television programmes, I mean, I did appear in Alas, Smith and Jones eventually and all those sort of things, and I also did an episode of Mr Bean. But the person that we got chosen to go along with was Pamela Stevenson in her pilot show for her own spin-off series, and it was the only one that didn't get picked up.
Because I remarked to her that I even remembered her from the episode of The Professionals she was in.
Wow.
She played a nurse who was a hostage and she had a hand grenade down her uniform. And at the end of it, really quite sort of 70s, but at the end of it, Bodie has to rip open her uniform and take out the hand grenade and throw it in a bin where it blows up and throw himself on top of her.
Bless him.
And I said it was really weird. And it never even occurred to me that it was filmed before Not the 9 O'Clock News. Of course she wouldn't be playing this small part as a nurse in an episode of The Professionals. But I saw it after I'd seen Not the 9 O'Clock News and recognised him. That's a weird career move to make after starring in a comedy show to then just do a bit part as a busty nurse.
And then several years later, I saw you playing a small child in a television programme. It was a ridiculous thing to do.
Yeah, very odd career trajectory.
Oh, brilliant. Well, we are going to take the pick of Billy Connolly. And but even though you know it off by heart, Ed, we're going to put it in there for you so you can listen to it anytime you like.
Thank you. Because do you know what else? It was just that bit rude, but not too rude, that my parents were all right with me listening to it. You know, the fact that one of the jokes had a punchline. And, you know, it's amazing the burst of strength you get when you bite your own willy. It was just the right level.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, words like jobby.
Yeah. And now my kids know the Welly Boots song.
Oh, you
know,
brilliant.
If it wasn't for your wellies, where would you be?
Yeah.
So I've kept it going for another generation.
Lovely. Okay, that's the first item. So what's number two?
Number two is definitely the most self-indulgent of my choices.
Good.
I'm going to put Camden Jonglers into the
title. Oh, right.
You know, which was a comedy club.
Mm-hmm.
And it was where I did my last ever open spot. You know, when you're doing 5-minute slots.
Before you broke, really, as it were.
Yeah. And it was the last one I had to do. I had done open mic at everywhere else, and I was in at all the other clubs. Jonglers is one of those clubs that tends to was always sort of disparaged by a lot of comedians. I even was listening to this very podcast and Milton Jones was on, and with somebody like, particularly was notorious for the Christmas shows. They could be really, it tended to be the club that was, you had to be really quite crowd pleasing and attention grabbing. But the Camden one was always just that little bit better. And it was actually, on a good night, it was a great club. I've had some fucking shockers there as well. I've gone on to nothing and left to less. But I've also had some amazing gigs there. And for about a year or 2 years, Jonglers virtually paid me wages.
Mm.
But it was the one that was the hardest one to get into. It was notorious for you have to do a lot of open spots. You have to do, you know, you go down, you do one on a Friday and then another one on a Saturday, and they keep you coming back. And then you do like a weekend of 10-minute spots until finally then you were in. And then once you were in, it was good money. So they had quite a, it was known for you had to sort of jump through hoops to get to be a regular there.
Yeah.
But on my third 5-minute slot that I did there, it was like the final scene in a film about someone who wants to be a comedian. You know, it was unbelievable. You couldn't write it. I had at this stage my 5-minute, my open spot. It was about two subjects. It was about smoking and it was about drinking. And it was really tight. There wasn't an ounce of fat on it. And it was bam, bam, bam. It was kind of, in the 90s, it was invoked to be very sort of in your face, quite aggressive, fast talking. And it was all that. And it just killed. Even if I say so myself. And I went off, and I remember it was Tim Clark was hosting, and he really had to calm the audience down for the next act.
Brilliant.
They actually, I swear this is true, they started chanting, "We want Ed, we want Ed." I swear that happened. It wasn't a genius fucking routine. It was a good routine. It was tight. It was just very, very gag heavy. And for that room, that time, for that level of drunk, it just worked a treat.
Brilliant.
I was in, I was out, and they, almost out of badness, they wanted more. It was an underdog thing, you know, he said, and he was only an open, because a lot of time, you don't want them to say that you're an open spot before you go on, because no. The audience can turn against you.
Mm-hmm.
When you leave after 5 minutes, it can be a surprise. And then like Tim goes, and that was only an open spot. He wasn't even getting paid. So then there's a kind of an underdog thing going on with the crowd. So there's a whole load of psychology for why they were being as nice as they were. But they did. They started to chant, "We want Ed, we want Ed." And then I didn't know this until afterwards. But just at that moment, the owner of the club phoned up about something else, phone box office, was speaking to the manager who was on duty that night and was asking him about something or other. And then just as in passing said, "Oh, and how did the open spot go?" And the manager went to the bouncer, "Open that door." And you opened the door from the foyer into the main room, and the manager held the phone up to the audience chanting, "We want Ed, we want Ed."
Oh, fantastic.
And he went, That's how it went. And he said, "Oh, I guess we better just put him straight onto Weekends then."
I'm sorry, but this it's been written by Richard Curtis, that, isn't it? Surely.
Is it? Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, it was an amazing night. And then it was just little things then as well. Even after the gig, you know, one of my favorite comics that was on, there was a Jeff Green, who I had seen open for Lee Evans at my students' union a couple of years previously, and preferred him to Lee Evans, and, you know, really, you know, was influenced by him. And then, you know, he was there. He was on the bill. And I went out for a drink with him afterwards, you know. And so that I just was really finally like, I finally cracked the last club. I'm a comedian now. You know what I mean? It was one of those real milestone-y moments. And then to find out afterwards that it was quite so cinematic, it's plotting, just made it even better. So, yeah, that's quite a conceited thing to put in.
No.
When you have a moment like that, you may as well mention
these things don't come along very often. They're worth clinging to.
And you have so many open mic spots where you die. Like the first time I did Ball and Banana, which is one of the best clubs on the circuit, I died. I absolutely died on my arse. And they were really nice about it afterwards. They said, because they had another club in Acton, they said, just come back and do the Acton one. And I showed up to the Acton club. And when they introduced me, I didn't show because I was in the toilet being sick.
God.
And they had to put me on after the interval instead of just before because I was throwing up when I was supposed to be on stage. And then, I got away with it. I was a lot croakier than I normally would be. But I just, you know, when you've got experiences like that where things don't go well, it's nice to remember the ones where things went spectacularly well.
Mm. People say to actors, oh, I don't know kind of how you do that, how you go on a stage in front of people. But generally, actors go on stage with a lot of other people. They've got backup, as it were. We're in this together. But stand-up comedians, I still to this day, it really would terrify me.
Well, I find acting can be nerve-wracking in that way, though. I've done a few plays, and it's more difficult if you make a mistake because it affects other people, doesn't it? You know, if you mess up somebody else's cue because you got your line wrong, or indeed you can look bad because somebody else messed up. Whereas with comedy, you've only got yourself. So if you do make a mistake, it's very easy to cover it or make a joke about the fact you made a mistake. You know,
true. I suppose it is an attitude to things, isn't it? I quite like the prospect of things getting fucked up. Here we are, we're all going to have fun now, because actually you would have done it lots of times where it didn't go wrong, and you're used to it, you know, so you think to yourself, well, we've done that lots of times, let's see what happens when somebody forgets their lines.
Yeah. I know you have had David Mitchell on.
Yes.
Have you read his autobiography?
No, I haven't, no.
I actually listened to it on audiobook, and he tells a story about when he and Olivia Colman used to do theatre in education.
Mm.
And there was a bit in this show where he would turn away and then turn back, and he would always try and make her laugh because he would turn back and he'd have something would be changed. He'd stick a mustache on, or he'd unbutton or sometimes he wouldn't even do anything. In fact, he hadn't done anything would make her laugh.
Yeah.
And he tells a story about making her a corpse, and she actually pissed herself on stage, and it actually they left, and her actual urine was trickling down the rake and into the audience.
I know somebody who worked with Judi Dench, and she became hysterical and then ran around the stage. And afterwards, she said, why did you run around the stage? She said, I wanted to spread my wee out. Isn't that extraordinary? That's Dame Judi Dench. So, you know, I mean, obviously, Dame Olivia Colman very soon, but fantastic. Mm-hmm. Anyway, what I find interesting is that, you know, you've gone from that 90s mode of how to perform it, and which was in a way imposed on you, that thing of having to bang, 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 bang the gags out. Mm-hmm. And then you've become much more relaxed as a performer, and it's much more sort of gentle.
Yes. It's nice to be, once you get off the circuit and people are coming to see you, particularly rather than just coming to see comedy, it's easier to, I suppose, be yourself, and you can find your voice better. I've become a bit more anecdotal, a bit more of a storyteller now than there's that sort of observation. I think I probably age as well.
Mm.
You know, when I was younger, I didn't have a great back catalogue of tales to tell about my life. And so it was more that's like, I need to tell you about your lives. Have you noticed this? Don't you do this when you go out? You know, it was like that. Whereas now I have enough stuff, you know, with a wife and a family and all this kind of thing. I have to go, let me tell you about when I had a hernia. And even though really I'm telling you what you should expect when you have a hernia, but I'm still telling it as what happened to me.
Mm.
It's nice, actually. Sometimes you get people who have come to see you who their life experience sort of mirrors yours. Like I did a show sort of a little over 10 years ago where a lot of it was about getting married. And then I did a show about, you know, having a kid, and then did a show, you know, where things like having had a hernia, stuff like that. And then, you know, meeting people after the show, it was like my routines are mirroring their lives. We got married when we saw you when you were doing stuff about getting married. And then you had our kids, and then you were doing stuff like that. And then he had a hernia. He had a hernia just 2 years ago. And then, you know, so I think you reach a point where you just thought there's no point in trying to chase, you know, trying to be cool or maintain an image with the young folk.
No.
And just play to your audience and talk about what it's like to wear cardigans.
Well, while you're doing that, sitting there in your rocking chair, you can look back and enjoy that open mic performance at Jongleurs. We'll put that into the time capsule for you. Brilliant. Okay, that's number two. What's number three? Okay, it's time for an ad break. We'll be back with Ed Byrne in a flash.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Welcome back. Okay, let's find out what else Ed Byrne would like to put in his time capsule.
Number three is not really about me, finally.
Oh, okay.
I have a map of the Grand Canyon.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I suppose I could just put the Grand Canyon in, couldn't I? We're not really constrained by reality.
No.
But I have a map from when I went there on holiday back in 2002. I remember I was a single man in his 20s and sitting up one night chasing through the stations and the documentary about the first person to navigate the Grand Canyon in a boat, do the whole thing, the whole Colorado River.
Yeah.
And I just watched it. It was beautiful. And I went, oh, you know what? I'm going to book myself on a trip. I'm going to go. And I went upstairs to my computer and there was an 18-day trip that you could do. And I had to wait 13 months to do it.
Wow.
I had to book it 13 months in advance. And 13 months later, I did it. And I just loved it.
Mm.
Just based on a spontaneous whim one night. And I think ever since then, I've had a kind of a thing about the outdoors. Whereas I used to do it a bit as a kid. I used to do hill walking and stuff. I think that was the moment where I never really enjoyed it that much as a kid. And then when I went and did this boating trip, and then it turned out on the boating trip that they were the people that they filmed for the documentary I had watched that had inspired me to book the trip in the first place.
Oh, wow, how fantastic.
And so, yeah, I just got into the outdoors.
Was the whole trip 18 days?
Or? No, I tell a lie, 16 days.
16 days.
16-day trip, yeah. I was the only one doing 16 days. Most people were just there for a week, and then there was a kind of a changeover of other people came in for the second week, and then there was a bunch of people at the end who were just doing 3 days.
Mm.
So I was the only one who was all the way through it.
Does that cover the entire length of the river?
Yes, it goes all the way from, yeah, you get in at a place called Lee's Ferry,
mm-hmm.
and it goes then all the way to Lake Mead. Yeah, Lee's Ferry to Lake Mead.
So I'm imagining that that trip is, you know, not really a sort of a houseboat down the Avon.
No. We were in boats that are called dory boats that are basically rowboats, but that have a sort of a cover for your gear.
Yeah.
But you're just sitting. We did actually, at one point we went through a rapid and the woman who was piloting our boat got washed out of the boat. And I actually jumped in and grabbed the oars and just got us ashore.
Mm.
And she climbed over, as we were doing that, she climbed back over the and climbed back into the boat again. It was really exciting.
And don't you get a crick in the neck or the just looking up?
Yeah. And the thing is, you never really get a good view of the Grand Canyon because you're in it.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
You know, you're much better standing on the edge of it to really get the magnificence of it.
Mm.
But it was amazing. And I got I ended up obviously doing a routine out of it. I got about 10 minutes out of it, which is a lot of the time how you mark any experience in your life as a comedian is whether or not it yielded material.
Yeah. It paid itself back.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a really memorable occasion. And it's definitely the best sort of trip I've been on. But since then, it's mainly hiking rather than rowing that I've done. And I love a trek. I love a long distance trek. So things like the Haute Route in Switzerland, which goes from Chamonix in France to Zermatt across mountain passes. So it starts at Mont Blanc and ends at the Matterhorn.
Oh, wow. Have you done that?
Yeah, it's great.
Oh,
or there's
wow.
the one, there's the Kungsleden, which is in Sweden. There's a thing called the Fjällräven Classic. And again, that's depending on how fast you do it. It can be a 3 to 6 day hike. We did it in about 4 days. You know, we went up the highest mountain in Sweden while we were doing it. And I love being at a high point and looking and seeing where you're going to be a day from now. You know, that's feels like proper adventuring.
Yes, it does. Yeah, I have this quandary in my life, is that I really love walking and I love the idea of something like that, but I'm not terribly keen on wilderness.
Right.
If I was going to do a hike, for example, do you know the actor Robert Bathurst?
He was in a great thing called Joking Apart.
Joking Apart, very funny series,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, where he played a stand-up comic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He did it well as well, didn't he?
He did. I wasn't a comedian yet when that came out, but I remember thinking... He was. I remember thinking he was like Jerry Seinfeld.
Oh, I'll tell him that. He'll be dead chuffed. But no, he told me that in the summer, when you could travel a bit more, last summer, he was going to walk from his house. He was going to walk from there down to the coast and then get the train back.
Nice.
He was going to do the entire thing on pathways and bridle paths and not go on the road at all.
Yeah.
And now that, to me, sounds like a brilliant thing. I love the idea of walking across fields and through woods. But the idea of being in the middle of the Nevada desert or something would terrify me.
Well, I can understand that, yes, because it can be dangerous.
Mm.
But there's loads of walks. I mean, I did a series a couple of years ago about a pilgrimage, the Compostela de Santiago, which goes through northern Spain. And as walking goes, I didn't like it at all. It's everything I go walking to avoid, in that there's a lot of people and you a lot of the time are traveling through quite urban areas and you're walking next to roads. But if you're into walking and not into wilderness, something like that is absolutely ideal.
Yeah.
Although there is a lot, you know, I don't know how religious you are. There's a lot of religion.
I'm
built
really
into
not.
It, you know, so, nor am I.
No.
So I didn't feel.
No.
And people always say, "Oh, but it's not really that religious." Actually, no. It's still you're pretty much bombarded with it the whole time. But there's a lot of walks out there that you can do that aren't wildernessy at all.
Yeah. Well, I've discovered quite a lot with my grandchildren, I have to say, during this last year or so.
There's a great book called Micro Adventures by a guy called Alistair Humphreys. It's just really little things you can do. And one thing is, for instance, get your bike and get on a train and go a couple of stops and cycle home again. You know,
that's a brilliant idea.
Or a great one is just going different distance radius from your house. So walk exactly half a mile north, say, from your house, and then maintain the distance of half a mile from your house and walk round in a circle.
Mm.
And you'd be surprised how different that walk will be if you go a quarter mile from your house or 3/4 of a mile from your house. And again, try and maintain the same distance from your house and just do a circular walk.
I did exactly that walk yesterday. Isn't that funny?
Really?
Yeah. Basically, we walked from my house and out, and we just basically circumnavigated my town, and it was a really, really good walk.
You're in Tunbridge Wells, right?
I'm in Tunbridge Wells.
Some very pleasant walks around there, yeah.
Right. I'm going to try a mile next time.
And he even suggests things like taking, you know, a bivy bag, you know, or a little tent or something like that, and do it if you're just that bit further out, and camp out, or, you know, when you're halfway around Farmer's Field or whatever.
You're never more than a mile and a half from home.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't think we need to put the Grand Canyon itself in there.
Just no, exactly. Just this map will do.
That inspires you enough, that map.
Mm.
So we'll put that in there.
I would mark that as the start of my career as an outdoors person.
Mm. Lovely. All right. So we've got two left, Ed.
So I've gone for a very large expanse of land this time on item number four. Mm-hmm. It was a toss-up between New Zealand or Scotland, and I've gone for Scotland. So if I can put the entirety of Scotland in, is that fair?
Yes, it's perfectly fair. It's your time capsule.
Well, I couldn't really pick between Glasgow or Edinburgh. So I put the whole of Scotland in. Glasgow is where I went to college. Mm. I went to Strathclyde University. And I had an amazing time there. And then having dropped out of college and then worked in the Students' Union for a year as the vice president, had an amazing year then. And then gave up academia and started a comedy club and started doing comedy before moving to London. But then you've also got Edinburgh, where you've got the Fringe Festival, where I also sort of grew up as a comedian and where I basically made my name. And also where I met my wife back in 2003. Dara O'Brien introduced us when I said, "Who's the hot girl in the white?" And then that's also where I do that's my favorite place to go hiking. So I do a lot of Monroe bagging, as they call it. So the whole shebang, Scotland has got to be my favorite place in the world, New Zealand being a close second.
Does it depend on the time of the year, though?
No, no, absolutely not. I mean, I don't really like rain particularly, I have to admit. So Scotland does have its drawback in that way. But no, in the summer, it's great. I've been hiking in the heat right. in Scotland, and I've been hiking in the freezing.
What about midges?
Do you know what? I find I don't have a problem with DEET. You know, the proper super strength stuff, the stuff that melts plastic. Mm. So long as you don't eat it, I don't put it on my cornflakes or anything like that. But I spray that on myself and they tend to leave me alone. I could, when you really cake yourself in it, you can see the midges come towards you. And I go, oh, geez, no, I don't think so. Apparently, it's not to have it around your children. It can cause all kinds of terrible growth problems and developmental problems. It's an absolute shit show of a chemical from a health perspective. But I haven't had any adverse effects.
Right.
And also wearing a midgy net. It's really more of a thing if you're camping out during the summer. Mm. When you're just hiking, when you're up high, the wind tends to be blowing. It's really only if the air is relatively still and you're camping out that they really become a problem. And I have had that a couple of times where, you know, there's three or four of us camping and we've all just had to retire to our tents to eat our food and wait for nightfall before we can then come out and sit together because you're just inundated.
And I love the fact that actually you've gone for a countryside that you sort of became aware of in your adult life rather than the countryside, the beautiful countryside you grew up in.
Yeah, well, I did do a bit of hill walking as a teenager. I was very lucky that we had a teacher called Joe McDermott who owned an adventure centre that he worked in, that he ran in the summer. Mm. And so we were one of the few schools in Dublin to have a hill walking club. So I did a bit of that. But I always remember just doing it because I didn't like football or I didn't like anything else. So, you know, just doing this to be the thing and never really enjoying it particularly. And I think part of that was just not understanding that you need to eat right and when you should be eating, the right stuff to pack to be comfortable. And it's just stuff like that I'm more aware of now. Mm. I didn't really love it when I was a teenager. And then I really grew to love it as an older man. When I went to college in Glasgow, I never went hiking that whole time I lived in Glasgow.
You very rarely go more than 100 yards from the bar, do you really, as a student?
Exactly. But nowadays, I was just thinking about it a couple of days ago. There's obviously a lot of things we all miss during this lockdown. But for some reason, the day before yesterday, I got an absolute hankering, like a pain in my heart for the fact that I hadn't been up a Scottish mountain since September 2019.
Yes, I know, it's very weird, isn't it? I keep talking about things as if they happened last year, and in fact they happened the year before last.
I was thinking about this, I was talking to my wife about it, like if you've been doing something, say if you're a comedian just as a for instance, or a singer or something like that, and you've been doing it 5 years, say you started in 2015.
Yeah.
Do you count this year? Do you say, oh yeah, I've been a comedian, like in 2021, you say, I've been a comedian for 6 years.
Yeah.
Or do you say, well, I've actually only been a comedian for 5 years because for a year there, I couldn't do it. Do you know what I mean? It's like, do you say, oh, I've been in events management for 10 years? Or do you say, well, technically 9 years because for a year there were no events to manage.
I know. I have done some acting in 2020, so enough for me to count it as a year of acting.
Yeah. And I've just about, exactly.
Yeah, but enough.
We're counting this, right?
Yeah, indeed.
this counts as part of our professional engagement.
But I feel really sorry for the, you know, say, for example, like you say, if you're a stand-up comedian and you've been doing it for 5 years, now you know yourself that at the five-year point, that's where you're thinking, okay, now I'm beginning to get it. Now I understand what I'm doing and I think I'm ready to move on. Something's going to happen. And at that point, it all comes to a dead stop.
Yeah.
Awful.
People like that, people who are just beginning to get momentum. We're obviously discussing this in a certain context. We're aware that there are people who have suffered far worse consequences of the COVID pandemic.
Indeed.
I have been able to weather the absolute decimation of my income. I can handle a year off, provided I know that there's still more coming afterwards. But yes, people who are just, especially when it's a lot harder now to get going and make a living as a comedian than it was when I started.
Mm-hmm.
When I started in the early 90s, the streets were paved with comedy clubs in London.
Mm.
You could make a living without ever leaving the M25. It was a much smaller circuit now anyway. And so if somebody's been doing it 3-4 years and were just getting to a point where they were paying the bills and then to have it stop, that's really going to hurt.
Yes, particularly if at that point they thought, oh, I can absolutely see a future for myself here. Things are starting to open up. Okay, right, I'm going to take on a mortgage. We are going to get married. Yeah. Okay, we will have those children. Because, you know.
Yeah, or even just turning around to all those people who went, yeah, but you have a fallback. Yeah, what if comedy doesn't work out and all that?
Yeah.
And finally, I'm a comedian. This is my job now. I told you it would work out. And the couple comes on and goes, no. Sorry, you actually really do need something to fall back on.
Mum, Dad.
Yeah, it's weird. I've always felt slightly untouched by things that, you know, cause problems usually. Like things like the credit crunch, when that happened,
mm-hmm.
the financial crisis, stuff like that. And I was in an industry that wasn't hugely affected by such things. If anything, during times of recession, people cheer themselves up
mm-hmm.
by spending on little things. While they won't buy a new car, they'll instead cheer themselves up with a lipstick or a ticket to a comedy show, that mm-hmm. sort of thing. So it kind of bounces off you. And then this is the one where it's like, this is my industry is more on its arse than most.
Mm.
Life has finally found a way to get to me. It's properly gotten to me. You know?
Well, at least you can open up your time capsule, if you dare.
And put Scotland in.
You can go for a stroll anywhere. Up Fort William, beautiful.
I'm starting to like this time capsule. It's like the Nexus in Star Trek Generations.
Okay, Ed, we've got to the final item, which is something really that you want to reject from your life.
I'm going to put something in that was, again, it was a professional misstep. It was the second time ever I did stand-up on TV.
Mm.
So I'm going to put in a show called Midday with Carrie Ann.
Do you know I missed it?
You wouldn't have seen it because it was only on in Australia, and it's a thing I don't really talk about it. I rarely have ever talked about it. Even when people say, "When have you really died?" I've only ever talked about dying in a live situation, but I did once die on my arse on TV, and I have checked; it's nowhere online. This is back in 1996. I went out to Australia. And I was unknown over here. I was unknown in Australia. But this is sort of pre-internet days where you could pretend you were well-known back home and go to another country.
I've done it myself.
So, I remember going back out to Australia in around about 98, 99. And somebody saying, so how are things going back in Britain? And I said, do you know what? They're actually going as well now as I pretended they were the first time I came out here. They're going that well. But I went out and I did generally quite well. I went out to just do a comedy club, a few weeks at a comedy club, and I did a slot. My first ever time doing stand-up on TV, I did and it was live. It was an evening show. It was called Hey, Hey, It's Saturday.
Yeah, I've been on it.
And I did a... Are you right? Okay. Yeah. And were you a judge on Red Faces? Or were you?
Well, all I remember about Hey, Hey, It's Saturday is that it also had an evening show.
But that was it. It started out as a morning show, a kids' show, like Saturday Superstore or whatever. And then one year, for some reason, they just decided to follow their audience to the evening.
Like Tiz was. They tried to go adult.
Yeah.
But they succeeded, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. They succeeded. But it was just a weird, they just decided, it had been on as a morning show for kids for a long time. And then for some reason, one year they just went, this is the generation we're just going to stay with. And they moved to the evening with them. And so there was a whole generation of Australians who basically grew up with it and continued to watch it.
I can't remember the name of the presenter, but he invited us back to his house. And we went back with somebody else who'd been on the show the night before, which was Freddie from Freddie and the Dreamers.
Wow.
I know.
Mike, that first time I was on Hey Hey Saturday, I met John Farnham. Remember, you know, the voice?
Yeah.
You're the voice, try and understand it. One hit wonder over here, absolute rock legend in Australia. And I remember we were dressed exactly the same. We were both wearing a white colourless shirt and a black Nehru jacket. Mine was from Top Man. His, I'm sure, was far more well made. But anyway, so I did that and that went very well. My first ever time doing stand-up on TV with Grant. And then a few weeks later, I went to Sydney. It was decided I was now going to stay on in Australia because things had gone quite well. And I was going to stay on and do the Melbourne Comedy Festival. So I ended up having it was supposed to be like a 6 week, maybe a month long trip to Australia, became a 2.5 months.
Great.
But the second time I did then stand up on TV was this show called Midday with Kerry Ann. I mean, I remember at the time thinking it was like Pebble Mill at One. It was the afternoon magazine chat show thing. And again, it was live. And it was because the afternoon, I had to be even cleaner and more accessible than I had been. I was a bit more free and easy with Hey Hey It's Saturday. But I was still very new. I only had so much material anyway. So I had 4 minutes left that I hadn't already burned on Hey Hey It's Saturday to then I would do on Midday with Kerry Ann. And I said, as I went out during the commercial break, and I said to the floor manager, can you give me a wind up when I've done 4 minutes? Let me know. Don't be looking at your watch on telly.
No.
And anyway, I did what I planned to do. And I looked at the woman and she's just looking back at me. And I'm like, oh. And I figure I've gotten nervous and I've gone too fast. I've burned through 4 minutes of material in 2 minutes. This is what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. So I go, right. I can't just go, thanks very much. So I start into another routine that I hadn't planned to do. Get about 3/4 of the way, basically get within hailing distance of the punchline before I realize the punchline is too dirty to do on TV. So pull out of that, and then I just floundered. And I even ended up doing, I was working with a comedian at the time called Nick Wilty, and I ended up doing one of his jokes.
Oh, no.
Which is, yeah, just reaching into my head for anything. I did another comedian's joke, and then it's a kind of a blur. I then just went, I don't know how long I've done. And then the woman stands up, throws her eyes to heaven and makes a wind up sign. And I go, thanks very much. Turns out I did 8.5 minutes.
Oh, no.
Turns out my 4 minutes were exactly the 4 minutes I'd planned, which she just, I know it's maybe unfair to blame her, but it ended up being, and I spoke to the booker afterwards, it was the longest, I think it's still the longest stand-up set ever done on daytime television in Australia. But 4 minutes of it was fine, and 4 minutes of it was death. And obviously that's the bit that people are going to remember.
The routine started okay. He seemed to know what he was doing, but oh my God.
Yeah.
He was awful.
And just looking back, like all I had to do, even if I had done only 2 minutes, having agreed to do 4, like if I had have cut and gone, thank you very much, good night, and then gone off and then said, oh, you were supposed to do 4 minutes, that was only 3. That still would have been better.
Yeah.
In going overtime.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've got to cut the sponsored thing with the chef who's supposed to be selling these noodles. Plus, no one's laughed for 4 minutes. Like, it was the worst thing. And then to add to insult to injury, I don't even know who it was. It was either Toni Collette. The film Muriel's Wedding had just been out.
Right.
I hadn't seen it yet. But one of the stars of Muriel's Wedding, one of the two female leads, was a guest on the show. I had not met her, which was, I guess, and the booker had said to me just before me going on, says, oh, such and such, you know, from Muriel's Wedding, which I pretended I'd watched, but I hadn't yet. She's going to Ireland next week. She wants to talk to you. She wants to know where she should go. I said, oh, I'd be delighted to talk to her. Came off having died I said, anyway, does that actress want to talk to me about that? And she said, no, she's gone. She just obviously left either too awkward to talk to me after, or just couldn't face
six
the sight
minutes
of blood,
in, but, apparently. 6 minutes in.
Yeah.
She's went, I've had enough of this.
I don't think I can trust his judgment on anything.
Get me out of here, quick.
Alone where to go to in Dublin.
Oh, Ed.
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord, that sounds so awful.
It was one of those things where it was just inexperience as well. Like, mm-hmm. I was really green. I would have been 22, 23 years old, and I only had 25 minutes of stand-up to my name.
Yeah.
And just didn't have the wherewithal.
Or the nerve to say, that's it, I'm done.
Exactly. All of it just was a perfect storm of just having kind of been riding high and really enjoying Australia. And I just came back down to earth with a bump.
Do you think she's still doing those?
I did go back and do that show and she'd forgotten. She clearly did not know I was the same comedian. I went back and did it. I think it could well have been 10 years later. Around about, I think, the last series of the show, I think it has finally done and dusted now.
And when they said to you, how long do you want to do? You said, I'd like to do 9 minutes, please. I'm going for the new record.
No. Can't remember if I even did stand-up or if I did that thing of doing your stand-up sitting down and pretending it's an interview.
Yeah.
I can't even remember now. But I do remember I went back and I did redeem myself. But it wasn't really my proper redemption because they didn't even realise I was the same person.
Yes, you'd got away with it.
Yeah.
Well, we won't talk about it anymore. Nobody will ever mention it again. We should put it into the time capsule and it'll be gone. It's not on YouTube. It's nowhere. And that's it.
Part of the reason I've only brought myself to talk about it in public is having checked and knowing that
that people can't look it up.
Yeah.
You know somebody's going to find it now, Ed.
I'm hoping it was taped over. It was one of those shows that was on every day for like 3 hours.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? I think it's one of those things where I don't even think they would have kept a record of it.
Thank goodness for that.
Touch wood.
Well, there we are, Ed. We've done it. We've put all the things in the time capsule. It's been so lovely to talk to you.
Well, thank you very much. And thank you for having me.
You've been listening to My Time Capsule with me, Mike Fenton-Stevens, and my guest, Ed Byrne. If you enjoyed listening, you can subscribe to My Time Capsule with the podcast provider of your choice or with Acast, our provider of choice, but you're free to go your own way. And if you do subscribe, you have the opportunity to rate this podcast and even leave a review. Oh, imagine the power. You have our fate in your hands. You can make or break us. Anyway, you can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. You just have to search for MyTCPod or me. Just think of it as showing an interest. It's really nothing like stalking. And don't forget that the theme tune, My Pastor P's Music, is available to download on Spotify if you'd like to hear it without me aimlessly talking over it. I mean, come on, you've ruined my career with your ratings and reviews. You've stalked me, and now you want to erase me from the whole thing. I'm not even sure I want to tell you that this was a cast-off production and that the producer is John Fenton Stevens, but I should imagine if I don't, you'll squeeze it out of me somehow. Control freak. Honestly, you need help. Sorry, I always imagine there's no one actually listening to this bit. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.